This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. It's International Women's Day this week, and groups in the La Crosse area are coming together to celebrate women around the world. As women's rights and immigration issues continue to be at the forefront of national conversations, hearing about the experiences from women from other countries coming to the U.S. provides an interesting perspective on current policy debates. Joining us to talk about these issues are Ghada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, Olena Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day event. And first, I just want to hear a little bit from each of you about kind of your experience in your country of origin and kind of what brought you to the U.S. So, Katrin, can you talk a little bit about, what it was like growing up in Iceland?
It was really good to grow up in Iceland. It's a very peaceful country. I was born and raised in a little town in the northwest part of Iceland, and my dad, he's a doctor, my mom, she's a homemaker, and day-to-day living is just a really good quality of life. I moved to the city when I was 10 with my family, and fast forward, I went to the University of Iceland and became a nurse. I met my husband. He's when he was in medical school, and after I met him, he did his 6 years of medical school in Iceland. And then the consensus is after medical school is to go abroad. You either go to the Scandinavian countries or you go to the States to further your training as a doctor. So of course I went with him, and we decided on Iowa City. We spent 7 years in Iowa City, and he did his training there. And I decided that I wanted to work to further my experience as a nurse. And I worked for the Visiting Nurse Association there for a few years. After working there and after he finished his training, we decided to go and work here for a little longer in the States. So somehow we decided to come here to La Crosse. We like it here a lot. We've been here 4 years, and I work as a nurse, and he's a cardiologist at Gunderson.
What do you think are the biggest differences between Iceland and the U.S.?
In my group of women that I have met here is that so many of them, they stay at home, and the reasons are multiple reasons. I only know one homemaker in Iceland, and that's my mom. Growing up, all other women, all other moms, they are in the job market. For example, 80% of women in Iceland, they work. Compared to here, it's about 45%. Education level is really high in Iceland, too. And in all of the in the University of Iceland, about 60% are women and 40% are men. So there's a difference there. So they are fighters. And
Olena, tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in the Ukraine and kind of what brought you to the U.S.
Well, like they say, ignorance is bliss. I grew up. And so it always that my country is the place on the earth where I will spend all my life, because we have from very early age, my grandparents, they lived in the village, and we had no electricity, no toilet inside. And we were just, working. I started to help my grandparents at age of five, and just I remember my time as a happy, always, we always had food, we always had animals, and I would say that most of the Ukrainian land is more like still agriculture land. But when I moved to the big city for university, I realized that not everything is so nice, right? And Ukraine has a lot of things. What you should decide if you continue or you immigrate or maybe change something. I finished university and I decided that the mentality of what has my country at that point, after having, I was in a philosophy facility, and of course I study a lot of the cultures and travel a lot, and I decided that I better probably find the place what will suit my, you know, my style of life, what I want to live, and I moved to the United States, got my second degree here, and stayed here.
What do you think was the biggest difference between Ukraine and the U.S.?
Mentality, and unfortunately, like, I am not on any mean representative on, you know, typical Ukrainian woman. So don't get too serious on taking from me information. I like in the United States, I do like, and of course, some of the things I don't like. I do like the kind of like sense of community, and it will kind of, you know, surprise you, but it is here much more than in Ukraine, where everybody's just, you know, kind of got the idea after USSR was fall that you have to, you know, just leave and use the moment, and it doesn't help for the future. And I like the United States open few possibilities to look at the future and, you know, make a difference today.
Absolutely. And Gada, tell us a little bit about your experience growing up in Syria and kind of what brought you to the U.S.
Yeah, I grown up in like what we can say conservative society, and like the women, they are like somehow overprotected and dependent, and usually they are like homemaker or at home. Some of them, they study at the university, and I have the chance like to be grown up in a family which like encourages me a lot to seek education. I had my bachelor degree in English literature, and then I get a scholarship from the government to do master degree in English language teaching in the UK, Warwick University, and then I return back and I start teaching at the university. And then in 2011, things start to change in Syria. And at that time, I have been also indulged in interfaith dialogue, and I've been to many conferences, and I have some connection, and I was able to get during this time, the start of the situation, you know, in Syria, I get a chance to have a visa to go to Qatar in the Gulf areas. And I was planning just to stay a short time until things are better in Syria, but then things get more complicated. And I stayed in Qatar like for about 3 years. I did another master degree in comparative religions, and then I was also a translator there working in the Faculty of Islamic Studies. And then I finished my study, and my job contract is expired, and then I have to choose where to go, and I got a visa here, and I have some connection because I have been to the U.S. before in 2007. It was like an interface program sponsored by, I think, the State of Department and organized by the National Peace Foundation. So I just decided to come here, and I am in now Toledo, Ohio, and I am applying for asylum because I cannot meanwhile return to Syria.
What do you think is the biggest differences between Syria and the U.S.?
For now, like, of course, like, you know, the safety and, you know, stability and as my colleague, she mentioned the education, like it's nice. I would love like to continue my PhD here, and it's at least you can apply also for asylum, like you can stay in this country. It's not like home because your family is inside, and the whole situation, like it's, I didn't decide to come here and sit. It's different when you just take the option and decide, but I am in a stage like I am obliged to stay here and, you know, seek for asylum.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with women from other countries who live or work in the Cooley region about the current climate for women and immigrants. We're here with Gada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, Olena Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day celebration. And Lois, first, can you tell us a little bit about the International Women's Day celebration that's taking place this week?
Sure. For the past 4 years, we have had 10 or 11 area sponsors who have been interested in getting out the word about the international women in our community. And so every year we invite 4 panelists. This year we're very lucky to have 5 panelists. And they each get to share their story and to comment on the theme each year for International Women's Day. So some of the sponsors are AAUW, formerly the American Association of University Women, the YWCA La Crosse, University of Wisconsin La Crosse, Viterbo University, Global Partners from Gunderson, World Services, Western Technical College, among other sponsors. And our committee starts meeting in November. We take nominations for who will be our panelists. And our goal is to promote global understanding and to say simply that an immigrant in our community is a neighbor we just haven't met yet. It's been very well received. We usually get 150 people, and we use Centennial Hall, Hall of Nations Room, as our meeting place. And every year we just learn so much more about the people in our community who have a different nation of origin.
Do you feel like this year's celebration has a particular, I guess, meaning to it or a particular weight to it in light of a lot of the recent, policy discussions going on in our country?
Absolutely. I think International Women's Day is more important than ever. It is celebrated around the world starting in 1909. In many nations, women are given the day off of work. They're given special gifts. And March is Women's History Month also, so it's very appropriate. I think we have many in the United States who are appalled with our current president's travel bans, with the increased fear of the other, people who are different from us in some way. So I think the more we can say, hey, let's take a look at the people who are contributing so much to our community, I think that's a very good thing.
Alina, why do you think that, an event like this is good for the community? You know, what do you think are the benefits of having a celebration?
Well, there should be everyday celebration for women, right? Not only one time per year, right? I would say that it's not about celebrating, right, but about remembering who we are, right? We're all international. Like my background, I had my family Jewish, and I had Polish people, my grandfather from Austria. And believe you or not, in Europe, it's a big celebration, right, Katrin? Mm-hmm. We all men that day will give flowers and or, you know, any type of appreciation. Why it's important? Actually, I was very surprised that in the United States, you guys know about International Women Day, because I always thought there was more like Europe, and right at that, at this day in Europe, workers or in school, they give each other flowers, and nobody gave me today flowers at work, right? So it's nice that, you know, I'm learning today that people are aware of it, and thank you for inviting me here, Hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Catherine, is that also your experience of you know, that this event in Europe is more, I don't know, well-known and more, I guess, marked or celebrated?
So I have not maybe been telling all of my friends and coworkers about this day, but I will. But it seems like everyone I work with, they're all American, or of course maybe not American in origin, but they are, they don't know about this day, a lot of them. But but it's the same, it's a celebration in Iceland, this, the International Women's Day. Yeah.
Why do you think that's important? You know, what benefits do you think come from really celebrating this day and taking a day to, you know, kind of think about and talk about women around the world?
I think it's a good day because we need to continue to remind us and everyone around us that we need to continue to fight for our rights. It's important for people to understand that we are all fighting. We are all from different countries, and we are all the same. Even though we're all different, we're all the same. Yeah,
absolutely. Gada, do you have thoughts on, you know, why International Women's Day is good for the community to really recognize?
Yeah, I think it's very important. This is not my first participation in International Women's Day. I've been to many countries and to celebrate this day, and I feel it's really a day which has to be like more and more like taking seriously. For me, it's not actually a celebration. It's a day where we can meet, where we can discuss issues like which sometimes the other woman or women who are not in a position, they can speak or act. So we have the responsibility to carry their voices and to speak on their behalf. And also, like, when you raise the issue to the table, there will be ways to solve it, to come up with a new solution, to try to help. Because I think a lot of people, they have this intention, they want to help, but sometimes they don't know how and where, and, you know. So I think it's, for me, it's a good way to build more communication and to have more relation and to build on that day for future, like, you know, planning for the whole year. And I would suppose, like, every year we see, like, after 1 year what we have, like, you know, achieved from the last year, and to build on and go on.
Lewis, what do you hope people in the lacrosse community take away from this event?
I hope that people will take away from this event a desire to learn more. We always recommend, the sponsoring organizations, we always recommend that women in March go to the National Women's History Project online, nwhp.org, or they go to the International Women's Day site, which will tell them what else is happening around the world for International Women's Day. And we hope that they will reach out to the people from other nations who are our neighbors, our co-workers, our doctors, our nurses, who are doing such important work in the La Crosse area. Every year, International Women's Day sets a different theme. And this year, the theme is Be Bold for Change. The International Women's Day organization which you can find out about online, sets a theme every year. And this year they looked at the recent report from the World Economics Forum, which said that statistics show pay equity for women will not be achieved until 2086. That's how slowly the progress has been. So this year there is a more urgent theme, and it is called Be Bold for Change. We have to do more than say we pledge to work towards pay equity and gender equity. We actually have to take bold action. So one of the things we have asked our panelists to speak about this year, in addition to their experience and their personal journey, we have asked them what it would take for a woman in their country of origin to be bold. And we're going to give that challenge to our audience also. What can you do in your own life to be bold for change for women's rights?
That's Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day celebration in La Crosse, here with us today to talk about women's rights and immigration issues in light of International Women's Day this week. Also joining us is Gada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, Olina Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, and Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, we're talking about International Women's Day this week and, you know, how it's a good kind of call to action for women in our community to be active on these issues. And, you know, I'd be interested to hear from each of you about kind of comparing climate for women in your country of origin to the U.S. And, you know, Katrin, I know you said earlier that, you know, in Iceland, majority of women, you know, participate in the workforce. They're highly educated. So, you know, can you talk a little bit more about kind of comparing climate for women in Iceland versus in the U.S.?
I think the thing is that we started early on fighting for our rights, and so I grew up watching everyone around me go to the university and study. It's only about $700 that it costs a year to go to the University of Iceland, no matter what you study. So, it's a consensus is to go and study. When you graduate and you raise a family, you're able to stay with your child after giving birth for 9 months. And it's paid 80% by the government. So the mom gets 3 months, dad gets 3 months, and together, combined, they get 3 months. And then when you're done with your maternity leave, you go back to work. And part of the why you can go back to work is because childcare is highly subsidized by the government. You pay about 10%. Of what it costs. You pay about $250 for your child a month. So that also makes it easier for women to go back to work. They don't need to stay home with their children. They have the urge to go back to work. I think we have a lot of role models. When I was growing up, we have the first women president elected in 1980. She served for 16 years. We have the first prime minister who's a woman in the world. She's also gay and married openly. So no one cares about that. We're very open-minded nation, and that's how I grew up. And I might have taken it for granted, but I feel very fortunate to have grown up in Iceland, and
Gada, can you talk a little bit about how you would compare kind of the climate for women in Syria versus the climate for women in the U.S.?
Yeah, of course there are like some positive things and, you know, negative things in each country, but I was surprised to know, like, the women take here less salary than men for the same job. This is something, like, taking for granted in my country. Women, they take the same salary, and sometimes it depends. They can take more than the men if they are more, you know, professional or, like, they have higher degree. So this is really, for me, like, it's so strange. And as also my colleague mentioned, in Syria, like, during the, if you give birth, you are allowed to have, like, 3 or 4 months with your salary complete, and you stay with your baby. And then also you are allowed, if you want to take more, to have, like, I'm not quite sure, but, like, you have month or two, half of the salary, and then 1 month, like, quarter. And then by the end, till, like, for example, you can have 1 month without a salary, but still your job will be there waiting for you. Like, after, like, 9 months, let's say, like, the baby is almost 9 months, you are able, like, you can now put him in the kindergarten and the mother can return to the job. The job is there. And during this time, they will have, like, part-time, you know, colleague or a person who will be in that position until the mother. And the person who comes to take the position, he knows, like, this position is just, like, a part-time, because the female, she is on a maternity leave. Yeah, it's, you know, and this is for us, like, you know, something I grow up, like, it's just also taking for granted. And I don't know, like, I expect here, like, because, you know, it's not like the U.S. is calling for rights, and you have the U.N. and the human rights. I think it's, we have to speak about that. And women here, they have the right to get this right, because it's their right. And during this time, for example, when she is especially on the military, when she gives the birth, she is not, like, you know, sitting at home doing nothing. She is busy, and she has a lot of things to do. And, you know, like, she is also taking care of her family and the baby also. The right, it's a right of the baby that the mother is with him. And she has done nothing, for example, to lose her job or the money. You know what? This is one issue. Also, like, I feel like also education here, because when I come here, I start looking for university as I want to apply for a PhD, and it's very expensive unless you get a scholarship. In my country, it's also, like, very cheap. Like, you pay a little, for example, unless you want to go to a private university, but the governmental university, you have the chance to study and you have, like, a degree, and you pay, like, very little amount of money. And even sometimes there are, we have, like, some organization, like, if some students, they are, let's say, they can't afford, you know, the tuition fees, like, they would help them. I'm sure here also there are, but in general, like, here I find, like, parents fights in order to get to the university and to pay the fees for the university. So it's a lot for the parents. And I find here a lot of students, maybe for some time they will leave the university, like, they will not go immediately. They will work a little bit and then they come back. So I think these issues, we have to work on it, like, to help here women get these rights and to have, like, you know, influence on the policy decision makers to, yeah.
And Alina, can you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, comparing the climate for women in Ukraine versus in the U.S.?
You know, we have this very interesting stereotype, and Russians, they know that stereotype. Bulgarians probably will know, too. So pictures with the woman with the fry pan and man who is drunk, right? And she, like, chasing him, and she's going to beat his, you know, up. Yeah, women in my society are very strong, and we have, I just actually read that we have 60% of all educated people are women. They 50% of our small businesses or medium businesses are led by women. They actually create them, and the reason why, because there's no job for what should take care of government, right? And believe you or not, the government only has 12% of women, right? So basically, we led by men, but the reason why we survived because of women, right? I would say that I never felt, and in my family, and I'm just going to speak about my family, women always kind of there the role in our families, and still continue. I have brothers, and they're led by their wives. More than that, they have successful business together, right? So a lot of... I think we have partnership in terms of, you know, if it's good family, then it's never, you know, nobody dominated and decisions make, you know, between husband and wife. If you want to get degree, if you want to open business, it doesn't matter who you are. And we have this interesting organization, Famine, and I just read about them too. They will go anywhere where big, you know, kind of events in the world, and topless, they will, you know, like kind of like a Pussy Riot, you know, but they have those guts to go, like when, let's say, Putin met somebody and, like, just, you know, take off their shirts and, like, you know, give their protests, right? So I think our women are pretty strong, and I think it only, I truly believe in. Men probably will hate me for that, but I think in Ukraine, if somebody will win in terms of, like, as a country, you know, it will be win because we have those powerful women who change men, right, and do only better for their, you know, future generation and for society today.
Alina Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, is here with us today to talk about her experience as a woman and as an immigrant in light of International Women's Day this week. She's joined by Gada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, and Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day celebration in La Crosse. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the current climate for women and immigrants in the U.S. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. 2017 has already been marked by national debates about women's rights and immigration issues in the U.S. These conversations will be at the forefront of many people's minds as organizations from the La Crosse area come together this week to mark International Women's Day. Joining us to share about their experience as women and as immigrants are Alina Belka, an interior designer originally from Ukraine, Gada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, Katrin Haraldsdottir, nurse from Iceland, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day event in La Crosse. And earlier this year, President Donald Trump issued an executive order freezing immigration from 7 countries, including Syria. You know, Gada, what was your reaction to this decision? And kind of, you know, how did you feel about when you heard the news?
Yeah, like, you know, I really was shocked because, you know, this is the image of the U.S., I don't know, this is my image of it, or I think most of the people, they feel this is a place of, like, you know, many people, they come here, like, seeking a land of freedom and equal, you know, status for, like, you know, people who are here, the U.S., and immigrants. So it was really a shock, like, this executive order, like, because when I came also here, what I find, like, the U.S. is full of immigrants. It's not like, for example, he is issuing the executive order, like, for a country, let's say, if it's like Jordan now, they have a lot of immigrants, or Turkey, because now, you know, they are receiving. It's a country with a history of immigrants. And you can find the second or the third generation. Like, for example, sometimes I meet a person, I say, what's your nationality? They say American. And, you know, from just the color and, you know, they say, like, maybe he's a Chinese or Pakistani, or, you know, they will not say, for example, I'm Pakistani. They have been, you know, here for years. And so when you give this executive order, it's not also about a banning. You create, like, you know, a barrier between people. Like, the immigrants, they feel offended. Like, for me, for example, I don't know if it will make difference in the future or not, but it doesn't affect me till now because I don't have a nationality. And but just I feel like I was rethinking, was it a good decision to come here? You know, before I don't have this. Before I was like, I just want to come here and it will be a place for me, like peaceful place. I can continue my study. I can work on, you know, to help, you know, people all around. But now I'm start thinking, I don't know if I will continue here or I have to leave the country and be in, like, better place. I don't know. Sorry to say this, but this is just what I feel.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, you're kind of going through the process of seeking asylum here.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, the kind of the current conversations around immigration in the U.S., if, you know, as someone who's kind of in that system and experiencing that system, you know, what do you wish people knew?
Just, I didn't get, like, the question.
Yeah. What do you wish people, you know, would remember or what do you wish people knew about kind of the immigration process or the asylum process here when they're kind of thinking about this issue? You know, do you feel like there's, like, the general public, there are things that they don't know about, you know, the immigration system in the U.S.?
I think now it's not about knowing about the immigration or the asylum. It's, you know, like, it's more about, you know, this executive order, which just come suddenly. And, you know, even like there was no announcement, you know, because when you want to issue a law, you just, you know, you say, like, for example, the law will be, for example, applied, let's say, after 2 months or by the beginning of 2017 or 2018. But, you know, just for me, it was so humiliating to have people at the airport, you know, like, this was really humiliating, you know, just nobody knows. And just, you know, the order come and just, you know, all these, you know, even I feel sorry for the police officer at the airport, because they are in a situation they have to apply the law. And at the same time, you know, people, they are working here and they have been here and they have their families or their houses and, you know, everything. And just they were in a vacation or whatever out of country. And then when they want to enter, it's a huge mess at the airport. This, for me, was really so bad. So it's not about, you know, it's good to know about applying and all these things. Like, even before I came here, I know some friends. I have very few options where to go. So they advised me, they said, don't come to the US unless after the elections, because nobody knows what's going on. And I didn't take it seriously, you know, like, I say, what will happen, you know, maybe, you know, but I didn't imagine the case to be really so serious and things to be so complicated. And even now, for example, my lawyer, she said, like, your case is strong, everything is legal about your coming and your staying, but you have to be careful and to have a plan B.
You know, Katrin, obviously, Iceland was not part of the immigration ban, but I just wonder, you know, as someone who isn't from the U.S. originally, what your reaction was to hearing about, you know, this executive order and kind of everything that's come after that.
Well, I was very angry. I did not understand how one man could do that. You can't judge a whole country for, you know, you can't judge a whole country and it's like saying you're all bad people or you're all terrorists. So I was angry. And during that same time, our president in Iceland invited immigrants from Syria into his home and welcomed them. So you see the difference between the presidents there. We want to welcome immigrants to our country.
Alina, do you feel like I don't know, the climate has changed for immigrants here and for people you know, of other countries of origin? Do you feel like the kind of that, even though Ukraine wasn't on the immigration, you know, the executive order either, do you feel like the climate for you as an immigrant here has changed?
Well, I'll tell you that I'm not totally agree with you about that it didn't hit Europe, because some countries, my brother, I just sent him invitation, and my brother has his own roofing business. He employs 20 people, and he traveled, like he was studying Switzerland and Sweden, everywhere where, you know, those big corporations where you can get more knowledge. No intentions to stay here. He has business in Ukraine, and more than that, he has family. And they ban him. So, you know, he went through whole Europe and never got refused. And what makes United States special? Well, the special, like Catherine said, one man. That's what makes United States special now, right? So pretty much it's changing the history, and United States is great because there's a mix of ideas. And if, just imagine in the very near future, there's no more mix of ideas, right? What could happen? More than that, it creates the law between, it creates the conflict, and that's exactly what happened in Ukraine, where we today divided people by ours or not ours, right? So the same pattern you see in the United States. Are you with us? Are you without us, right? Or not us, I would say more. And I think it jeopardized actually the system and solidarity as a you know, democratic, powerful country. So I really hope that in the future the, you know, law kind of will get softer. I understand there is some issues in the world and they try to understand how to fix them, but you can't fix, you know, issue by saying that, okay, we have to change the history completely.
That's Alina Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, here with us today to talk about women's rights and immigration issues in light of International Women's Day this week. Also joining us is Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland, and Gada Ghazal, an educator from Syria, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day event in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And so, you know, Katrin, what has been your, you know, since the election in November and kind of the Women's March in Washington earlier this year, you know, I guess what's been your perception of the treatment of women in our country over the last few months? You know, do you think that people are kind of, I don't know, looking at women differently?
I have a very hard, it's hard time answering that question, I guess. For me, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Alina, do you have thoughts on kind of, you know, what's been your perception of treatment and of women, you know, over the last few months, you know, since the November election and a lot of the changes that have been happening?
I think women are more powerful now because, like, I live with roommates, and my roommate, she's you know, she is vegan and just a person who is not indifferent, you know, any changes. And I see her encouraging me changing, you know, my thoughts on many things. You know, like we have to join organizations, we have to do that. She gave me those ideas. I don't have time for now because I just bought a house and I'm remodeling it myself. But definitely in the future, seeking to, you know, help for organizations, nonprofit organizations, especially in La Crosse. It will be so wonderful if people will more aware about, you know, about like your power and like your 100% of energy, what you can put out. And
yeah. And Gata, you know, what's been your perception of kind of the treatment of women in the last few months?
Just now it came to my mind when woman, she said like, you know, like a phrase or sentence, it's really like, you know, had great influence on me. She said like, we have to think now again, like, you know, we think America protects us. It's not. It's, we have to go to God. God is the one who protects us, and we don't have to depend on humans. We have to work hard and depend on God because humans can let us down. So it really affects me. And like, she's an American woman. She is like, she works, she has family and children. She said all the time, we say like, as if like when we look at all over the world, what's going, you know, like, what's the conflicts going in all the areas, we feel like America protects us. And at one point, we lose that faith. And it was like, maybe what he has done, like, it's negative, but it has some positive, you know, thing. It makes people stop again, think again, and try to build their relationship, their faith more, and try to be more positive and more active and not to take things for granted. And this really, I think it's a good point from the whole situation.
Yeah, got it. And you're an interfaith activist. And yeah. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, you know, kind of how you're feeling as kind of, you know, this conversation about, you know, how the U.S. is treating and thinking about Muslims in our country, you know, kind of how you're feeling and processing this.
Yeah, like I feel when I came here, like, you know, I really like there's like there are a lot of Muslims and they are in position and they have their rights and they are seeking education. But also I find like also there is like a lot of misunderstood ideas about Islam and, you know, this Islamophobia and fear of tourists and every Muslim, like, you know, he's a tourist, you know. And this is, I think it's very bad to generalize, you know. Of course, we have, like, you know, maybe some mistakes, and maybe Muslims, like all other, you know, categories of people, they make mistakes. But, you know, to put this on focus and just to focus on all the time of it, this will give you negative reaction from the people themselves if they don't feel welcomed. And more now, I think from what's this executive order, Muslims, they feel so bad because they are like, he, in one of the statements, like he wants to clear the U.S. from the tourist, as if like he is calling me personally. I feel it is personally. I am a tourist. I have done nothing. You know, and there are, I believe there are many people like me, and they have been contributing to build the country, and, you know, they pay the taxes and they have been here. And so I feel really like in the place where I come to seek justice, I feel I don't have this justice and this fear. And in any religion, like for me, the most important thing to have like to have justice for all people, because if you don't have a justice, you cannot build. And it reminds me, like, for example, when I came here, like, you know, in the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, like when they have a lot of torture where he and his people and his tribe, he asked his followers, like, just to run away from this torture and to go to a Christian king. And just he was saying a phrase, go to that king, because he is a just king. So, you know, like, you know, for me, this is, you know, like, it's so effective, like, you know, just to send people, even if it's not about religion or Christianity, or it's about to have justice. If you lose justice, I think the U.S. is going to lose a lot.
We've been talking with Ghada Ghazal, an educator and interfaith activist from Syria, Alina Belka, an interior designer from Ukraine, Katrin Haraldsdottir, a nurse from Iceland, and Lois Gilbert, an organizer of the International Women's Day event in La Crosse, about the experience of women and immigrants in the U.S. in light of International Women's Day this week. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.